Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Scully?
Yes?
Marry me.
I love you and I like you.
I love you and I like you.
I love that woman. I love her more than sharks love blood.
I love you.
You don't.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to Nerd Nuptial Episode 10. Thank you so much for everything that you guys do by downloading, subscribing, and liking, and contacting us, emailing us. You really are helping us because just the other day, girl, I found out that not only are we still on the New and Noteworthy list, in the top 100 of the New and Noteworthy list, we're in the top 200 of TV and film.
That's awesome. That's so exciting. We only have 10 episodes.
That's out of all of them. That's out of all of the podcasts on iTunes, registered under TV and film, and we are at 132 last time I checked.
Yay!
I know, how exciting. And that is because of you guys, because you guys review us, you rate us, you contact us, you listen, and more importantly, you download. So
thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Now, we're going to talk about a myriad of things today. We have three things on the docket. We're going to talk about the Star Wars Rogue One trailer.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about our rewatch of Star Wars The Force Awakens. But before we do any of that, we're going to be talking about The Walking Dead season finale.
That's right. So if you have not watched that yet, make sure that you do before you listen to this podcast.
We always try to give you a spoiler warning because it's so hard to do spoiler-free content and actually make it worthwhile.
Yeah, I don't like doing spoiler-free.
I don't like it either. And here's the thing is that some people want it. And I completely respect that. I completely respect the people who want people's opinions, but they also want it to be spoiler-free so that they can then go make their own opinion. I've never really been that way. I don't read reviews until I've seen the movie or watched the TV show just to see other people's opinions on something that I saw. But I mentioned that on Twitter the other day and people thought the exact opposite.
They're
like,
oh, really?
Yeah. They're like, no, I want to know about people's opinions before I watch it. To me, that would like taint my reality.
I was just going to use that exact word. Yeah. It would make me, while walking into the theater or, you know, watching the episode, I would have preconceived ideas of how I was supposed to feel.
Yeah.
So,
like with Batman v Superman, you know, like if people said they're like, oh, the third act is really, really slow and the worst part of the movie, the entire time I'd be watching it, I'd be like, oh, well, this is really great, but it's going to start to suck, so I might as well tune out. You know, like,
right,
I don't know, you know,
right,
something like that.
Yeah, I get it.
I know it's a simplified example, but that's how I feel. But people who tune into this podcast just know, I mean, we'll always give you a spoiler warning, but just know that we're probably never going to do a spoiler-free review of
it's
something.
It's true.
So put us in the queue after you watch something.
That's right.
Which people, a lot of people did for House of Cards.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They downloaded mm-hmm. us and they're like, okay, I'm going to listen to this later.
That's right. Especially since we did it so fast.
Now, but, you know, speaking of spoiler-free, you know, there isn't much to spoil with the season finale of The Walking Dead.
Yeah, it did not really feel like a Walking Dead season finale to me. Because I think about all the past season finales, and we always kind of joke about how Walking Dead has these awesome openers and finales. And I feel like this is one of those ones where it was kind of simple. It was kind of like not a lot going on. I mean, I know there were things that happened, but it wasn't these over dramatic like it usually is. The payoff, like basically for sitting through all the conversations, which is usually the case of the season. But I thought it was a solid season.
See, yeah, that's the thing is that I went online and I actually, because we didn't watch the episode right away, we actually waited a couple of days on this one.
We
usually wait on one day for TV because we have iTunes season passes. But, you know, like I tried to avoid people's opinions as much as possible, but it was just kind of hard because not everybody used hashtags when they were talking about it, so it didn't mute it in my feed. But a lot of people were saying like, oh, you know, this was horrible, this was lazy writing, and they're like, oh, this is the worst season writing-wise so far. I agree with the lazy writing for the episode, But I thoroughly enjoyed this season overall.
I was going to say, I think that they kind of listened to their criticism of having, you know, like a really big opening, really big closing, and maybe one really good episode in between. I thought there was a lot of, I mean, action that happened that was important throughout mm-hmm. the entire season. So I don't really have many complaints. I mean, I think this is one of my favorite seasons, actually.
Yeah, I'd have to say the same, because they didn't feel like they had that much filler. Now, was there filler? Of course.
Yeah.
There's always filler. But when you look at previous great seasons mm-hmm. of Walking Dead, there's always a lot of filler. And actually, I was just podcasting with John Mills, who's a host of the Aggressive Negotiations on the Nerd Party Network. He was talking about how he's like, Tristan, I'm going to steal something from you and the girl, but it's very much like The Walking Dead, where it's like, oh my God, something crazy happens. And then nothing, 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 nothing. Oh my God, something crazy happens. I think he was describing Star Wars Rebels.
Okay.
And yeah, it's true. It's like, we're not the only ones who feel this way. I mean, that's
right.
Just how it is.
Yeah,
that's
it's
format.
Just, it's kind of, you understand that going into watching The Walking Dead, mm-hmm. a season of it. But I feel like this season really had a lot going on.
Great opener.
Yeah.
Great mid-season finale.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Great mid-season opener.
Yeah.
And it's just, we thought, like, we were building this entire season to something big. We were building to Negan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they kept talking about Negan. They kept teasing Negan. We all knew, if you were online, you all knew who Negan was going to be. And so you knew he was a great actor. And then...
Yeah, when we actually met Negan... I felt like that scene went on very, very long.
Oh, my gosh.
I actually kind of started to space out a little bit in the middle of it. Did you?
I did, too. here's the thing is that, like, if a student submitted me that script, I would have said, cut it by 2/3 and try again.
Yeah. It would have been a lot more effective if it was tighter.
I just don't get it. It was so lazy. It was so... uneventful, because the entire episode was them just driving, and it was just them driving in an RV because Maggie's in labor, or not labor.
I don't know. She's probably having a miscarriage.
Yeah,
or
it's
something
too early
like
for labor.
Yeah, going on.
And she's just driving. They're just driving in the RV. They take everybody important away from Alexandria. Everyone who can fight.
Yeah, that really. I think even midway through, I said to you, I was like, oh, so we're getting all the important people out. Of Alexandria. I wonder what's going to happen.
It's such a mystery.
Yeah.
And it's just, and then they just keep driving and they hit these roadblocks from Negan's people, and each roadblock gets a little bit crazier.
Yeah.
But not crazy in the sense of something's going to happen. It's just, oh, that's a bigger log in our way, you know? And then boom, we hit Negan, and then the scene goes on as long as the pod racing scene from Phantom Menace. and then it's done. And then, like, Negan kills somebody. He kills the cameraman, essentially.
Yeah.
But we don't know who it is. And so there's this big cliffhanger. The internet lost its mind because they hated the cliffhanger.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't care.
I expected the cliffhanger.
Yeah.
I completely expected it. And I'm like, okay, well, whatever. We're going to find out. So,
yeah. I mean, have you ever watched Walking Dead before?
Right. I mean, it's going to happen. So, I don't know. That's strange.
I was confused by that reaction.
Oh, yeah?
Like, there are... Oh, my God.
We didn't react too much to it at all, because I saw it coming. It's not like they're going to show us. They're not going to have that payoff of finding out who got hurt. They're not going to do that.
No, not at all. The only way that they would do that is if they killed them 2/3 of the way through the episode, so that they could have some falling action of people mourning, kind of like that blonde who would sing all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember her
Beth.
Name. Beth. Oh, thank God she's dead. We clapped during that.
Yeah, I did not care.
But yeah, they would have a moment like that. They would have a morning of passing, but mm-hmm. when they kept going up to the final minute, we all know, oh, it's going to be a cliffhanger. And it's The Walking Dead, so of course it's going to be a cliffhanger.
Right.
I was really confused by the internet's reaction, because we need to talk about this too.
Okay.
Okay?
What are we going to talk about?
I want to get your perspective on this. There's a petition, multiple petitions, made by quote-unquote fans of The Walking Dead, saying that we deserve more and that they need to change the show and change the episode or re-release it so that we know who dies.
What?
Yes, that is true. I'm not making that up. Google it. It's there. It's disgusting.
What?
Yeah. What do you think of that?
I feel like if you've ever watched a season of television...
Not just The Walking Dead.
Yeah, not just The Walking Dead. You understand that this happens all the time. This is not an obscure thing. This is something that happens in television all the time.
All the time.
All the time. Yeah, that's really odd that that would be a thing.
One of the greatest moments in television history, as far as I'm concerned, was with Star Trek The Next Generation at the end of season 3, I think it was season 3, where Picard became Locutus, the Borg, and then Riker realizes that his boss is now turned to a Borg, and then it says he says, "Mr. Worf, fire," and then boom, you know, the music swells, an executive producer comes up, dun, 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 and then we had to wait an entire summer to figure out what happened next. That was amazing. People lost their minds, but it was cool. Yeah, it was in a good way. But
absolutely.
The sheer idea that you have the right to petition somebody to change what they do, that they make, how they make their show, the way that you do that is by not watching.
Right. So if you're that upset, then don't watch the show.
Whatever happened to just not watching?
I think it's because people have a voice now on the internet and they know that they'll be heard. So I think that that's kind of the new culture that we are in, is that people can complain about whatever they want and expect to have some type of change.
It's alarming. It's pretty crazy because...
Okay, like, for example, this is kind of a silly example, but I think it was season 2 of The Office. We had Jim and Pam kiss, and it had been leading up to them kissing. And we did not know how she was going to react to that kiss until the next season. People didn't, I mean, yeah, people were like, oh, I wonder, but it wasn't like they were, I mean, I feel like the internet wasn't as big at that time. I mean, I know there was still internet, but, you know, like you didn't have Twitter and stuff like that.
Right.
So, but that made you come back and watch the next season. So I don't quite understand that philosophy.
I don't get it either. I feel like, you know, you and I have been having a lot of behind the scenes conversations about content creators, about producers of television, movies, podcasts, comic books, all these people. They create content and then you buy it.
Right.
Or you watch it and sit through the commercials. However you quote unquote buy it, you know, it's your decision to spend your time by consuming their material. But then they do something that you don't like. And so you feel, well, I'm a fan and I've spent time on your material, so thus I own it. They have this sense of ownership over the creations of content creators. And it's this weird, I don't know.
It's a weird relationship because it's like, especially with certain things that we really enjoy, or even in like they're so strongly a part of nerd culture, you know, we always talk about how people are appeasing the fanboys or appeasing, you know, the fangirls. And I feel like there's a part of honoring your base that appreciates your content. But you also don't want to make a camel and have something that everyone's like, oh, what about this? What about this? What about this? And then you just have a hot mess. I feel like sometimes when creators try to listen too much to the public or their fan base, there's a reason why they do what they do. And they have a bigger picture in mind. So I feel like, you know, if you're creating content based on just people's opinions on and Twitter or, you know, on the internet, then it probably wouldn't be as good because they don't understand where it's going.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I agree with every single thing that you said, because it's just so strange that we're now doing this. Like, this is common. And we're not saying don't complain. We're not saying, like, oh, just eat up everything that somebody gives you. We're not saying that at all.
We are definitely not those. I mean, we complain enough about stuff that, of course, we have opinions and we feel like certain things should go a certain way. But there's a certain line of let them do what they need to do and then decide whether you like it or not.
Yes. And like, yeah, let them do what they want to do and then choose to consume or don't. But do not feel like you have ownership over something that you did not create.
Yeah.
And I think that's what got me, is that if you want to complain on Twitter, on Facebook, wherever, I do it. Yeah, I do it all the time.
Right,
I'm just
sure.
as bad as the people listening to this or the people who are just complain 24/7. I'm just as bad as you guys. And and so are you. You know, you just don't do it online. And
I do it on here, I guess.
you do it on Nerd Nuptial at thenerdparty.com. But I think what pushed me over the edge is the petition, is seeing petitions. People just, you know, vote with your eyeballs, vote with your wallet, and just let them know that you're not going to watch it by stopping watching. And it's just...
We do that all the time.
Yeah, like Big Bang Theory. We were big fans of Big Bang Theory. And then it got so repetitive and so horrible that...
Formulaic.
And so I think by the fifth season, which I'm surprised we gave it that long, we said, okay, we're not going to watch this anymore. Did we write Bill Prady? No.
No. We just stopped watching.
We stopped watching.
Which we probably are like the only people because that show does so well. But... Oh,
yeah, it does crazy well, but in our community, it does not do well.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Nerds on a whole don't like Big Bang Theory. We might actually get some emails because we mentioned that we watched it.
Oh, really?
It's crazy.
That's funny.
We'll talk about that sometime.
Okay.
About nerd backlash. But yeah, anyway, I don't want to dwell on this too long, even though I've already dwelled on it too much. But yeah, it's just, I think that's the thing, is that like, complain all you want, watch it or don't watch it, but just don't expect a petition to change something. Now, I agree that like, do content creators make mistakes? All the time, constantly, every single day.
Yeah.
But should they listen to their fan base? Yes, to an extent. They should gauge fan reaction, not fan dictation.
Yeah, I mean, and I feel like sometimes when creators listen too carefully, like I said, I feel like then their product suffers.
Yeah.
Their content suffers.
It's not as pure. And like you said, you described it as a camel where it's just like, oh, this segment of Twitter said that they wanted this, so let's throw that into the mix. And this segment of Facebook said that they wanted this, so let's throw that into the mix. And then it's just a horrible mess.
Yeah, it's not what you want to see.
Right, right. All right. Well, I guess we pretty much talked about it. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoy this season. I liked the character development. I liked what they did with the characters. Like I said, I think a few podcasts, actually our first podcast, I liked Alexandria more the later in the season.
Yes.
When we were trying to defend it more. That'd be the beginning when we were, you know, making casseroles and things were too comfortable. I was not into it. But I feel like as time went on and how they used Alexandria was really good. And, you know, it's just funny because I think they got rid of characters that I didn't really care about and kind of in a timely way. I think that they did it appropriately. And a lot happened this season. So I liked it.
Yeah, I did too. And Rick and Michonne got together. What more do you need?
I was
going to
say, I think that probably trumps everything in my mind. So we'll go back and probably rewatch the whole season. But the fact that they got together, and they stayed together because I was really worried about that. That they would kind of tease us and then, you know, they go back.
Didn't take it away.
Yeah, they didn't take it away. So
speaking of which, Gilmore Girls.
Yes.
Photos were released in Entertainment Weekly this past week. And there is a photo of Lorelai and Luke holding hands.
I'm on board now. Cause I told you I'm not gonna watch it if they're not together.
Yeah. Yeah. It's you know that they released that photo.
Just to like make the fans at ease, probably.
Yeah, yeah. Because that was our question. That was like, it's okay, true. If they're not together, then we're not gonna watch it.
It's and so, so
they're
true.
Like, boom. But my only concern, and this might be unfounded, is that they'll try to
split them up in the
middle.
They'll
try to split them up in the middle or something.
Well, I guess we better not start a petition, considering what we just talked about. Oh, dear.
Oh, don't worry. I have one ready.
Oh, okay. Good.
Okay.
Good.
I'm not a hypocrite at all.
No, not at all.
All right. Well, speaking of fan reactions, we need to talk about Star Wars Rogue One.
I'm so excited.
I am so utterly jazzed. I had no idea that I would be this jazzed.
Yeah, I am really excited. And I'm also excited that it's another female lead-driven Star Wars film. Because that was my favorite part of The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty excited.
When we found out that Felicity Jones... I keep wanting to call her Felicity Huffman, and it's totally
weird.
Not her.
Okay.
Very different actress.
I loved her in The Theory of Everything.
She was fantastic. Yeah,
yeah,
she's a solid actress.
She was really
good. Yeah. I'm excited about her doing it because she's a solid actress. She's great. She's nominated. And we just have a lot of great people. And I love that it's another female-centric Star Wars movie. Because, oh, man, I'm going to start complaining again about the internet.
Uh-oh. That's why I don't go on the internet.
99% of the fan reaction was phenomenal.
Okay.
Was great. People were saying, yes, this needs to happen. This is going to be great. This is going to be awesome.
Okay.
But there's that 1% that just...
ruins it for everyone.
Sticks in your brain and just, you can't get rid of it. Yeah, it's just, it's horrible. And people were complaining that it's another female-centric lead. They're saying, I remember one person who had a lot of followers. Like, so he's Twitter famous. I'm not going to mention who it is. But saying, try to imagine another male-centric Star Wars episode because it's never going to happen again.
We have six of them.
We have six previous ones.
We have six. Thanks.
And the two standalone films that are coming out after Rogue One are going to be male-centric because it's the Han Solo standalone film and it's the Boba Fett standalone film.
You can't give us two?
No? Yeah. You can't give women two
really?
Out of nine?
Yeah. Come on now.
It's insane.
That's crazy.
Absolutely insane. And just sheer numbers. And also, if you look at those previous six movies, you have what? Three main characters who are female, mainly just two?
Yeah.
We have Padme and we have Leia.
That's it.
Name somebody else who's a lead character.
None. There's no others.
No. There's Mon Mothma.
Right.
She had three lines.
Right.
And then there's like Padme's handmaidens.
Right.
At the beginning, and that's it. Those are the women. And then you had Jabba's sex slaves.
Yeah.
Those are the women of Star Wars.
And in the originals, they got rid of certain, like, for example, the fighter pilots. There was like one woman, and they got rid of it because it was like apparently distressing to the audience.
They dubbed her voice.
Yeah. So I think it's Star Wars time to catch up with the fact that we can have a female lead. And it go well, because we've seen it happen now, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And I also really feel like from the trailer that it's not like a Rey repeat. Like, this is a very different character, mm-hmm. which I really appreciate. You know, I mean, yes, I'm sure both of them are going to be, you know, kicking ass, but...
It's Star Wars.
Star Wars, and that's what they need to do. And think about it, just reverse it for males. I feel like, you know, we have... the lead is always going to kick ass.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting another character that has some cool backstory, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
A troubled past, yeah. In fact, she's in handcuffs in the trailer and mm-hmm. everything like that. Whereas you don't have that with Rey. You know, Rey's just kind of like...
She's an orphan.
Orphan and cute.
that's the thing is that like Rey is badass and adorable at the same time. I don't think we're going to be able to call Felicity Jones's character adorable. I feel like...
Yeah, she does not come across that way.
No.
It feels like she's been a part of things longer and, you know, she's got more going on, troubled past and everything like that.
Can you imagine what the internet's reaction is going to be when we finally get a woman of color in a lead in a Star Wars film? Oh, people are... Oh, it's going to be disgusting.
Break the internet.
It's going to break the internet, but it needs to happen and it will happen.
Yeah.
And thankfully, speaking of race, we're finally getting some Asians in the Star Wars universe with Rogue One. We got one guy who is from Lost.
That's right.
In The Force Awakens, he had two lines. So we're finally getting some, at least not just guest cast, but some supporting cast
mm-hmm.
who are maybe even more, you know, who are Asian, which if you look at all of... Star Wars, those previous six movies that the male-centric fanboys always talk about. Yeah, there was just so little diversity in Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment that we get...
Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, we got Samuel L. Jackson. That's about it. Yeah, Lando and Sam.
Yeah.
We got two black people.
Yeah.
It's insane. Two women and two black people.
Right.
Oh, and no women of color.
Right.
Oh.
So... It's time.
It's time, guys.
It's time, people.
It's time. We need to move on from this. It's 2016.
Right.
Okay.
It's a little distressing, actually.
It is distressing, but we're going to move on.
Okay.
Let's talk about positive things, okay? So let's talk about positive things about the Rogue One trailer. Ben Mendelsohn, who was the bad guy in The Dark Knight Rises, like the guy who was pulling the strings behind Bane,
mm-hmm.
he is a Grand Admiral in the Empire's fleet. He's the guy who wore the white cloak, like the
yeah, cape. That's cool.
I never thought I'd be able to see that actor, no offense to him, as intimidating. And we only had two shots of him, and I immediately was enraptured by the mystique of him. Star Wars knows how to do bad guys.
Oh yeah, they do. Come on. Of course they do.
It was so great. Like, I'm so interested to see how, what he does and how badass he is, and the accuracy of the Star Destroyers.
I was just gonna say that, yeah. And to see, like, you know, the Death Star being put together, I thought that was really cool. And, you know, just kind of seeing those old pieces in action again, I think will be really neat.
Yeah. Yes. I think it's gonna feel like, you know, it's a prequel, but it's gonna feel like one of the original movies.
Which I'm so excited about.
That's an amazing sentence that I just said right there. It's a prequel that will feel like one of the original movies.
Right.
And some people were saying, like, oh, it doesn't feel like Star Wars. You know, it doesn't feel like, you know, like, it doesn't feel like it has the levity. It's too somber. I feel like that's a knee-jerk reaction that we're used to nowadays, where it's just like, oh, something's too gritty or something's too dark. This is a standalone Star Wars film. This is not called Star Wars Rogue One. This is called Rogue One,
A Star Wars story. Which I thought was good.
Yes.
To mention that. That way, it kind of puts away any of those questions, because it's different.
Right.
But it's still in that universe, and it still actually takes, it's a prequel, you know, kind of in the middle there. Yeah, I think it's great.
It opens up a whole new world of possibilities. We no longer have to follow a specific Star Wars format in order to tell a Star Wars story. We can have a heist film. We could have a buddy cop film if we wanted to. You know, like, we could...
I don't know if I want that.
You know what I'm saying. Like, we could have, like, a road film. They could do anything that they want in these side stories. They can have it any style. They could do a Star Wars noir piece. How awesome would that be? An investigation. You know, it's just... I'm just spitballing here, but it's okay if it doesn't feel like Star Wars.
Yeah, it opens the doors. Yeah. And let's be honest, people love this world. They love Star Wars, so why not open that door? And I love the idea that, you know, it was mentioned in A New Hope, you know, what is happening in Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for those diehard fans, it's just bonus. I think you just have to look at it that way. It's a bonus.
It's a bonus story. I mean, we're still getting episode 8. We're still getting episode 9.
Right.
I'm sure we'll have tons of people say, I've got a bad feeling about this. You know, like, like, that's all going to happen. But that doesn't mean that it has to happen in this one.
That's true.
And
I agree.
That excites me.
Me too. I'm excited. I think it looks cool.
Forrest Whitaker's character.
Oh, yeah.
I am interested. I'm very interested to see where he came from, what he's going to do, what he's seen. You know, what he's been through.
Yeah, it looks interesting.
I could see a very Obi-Wan Luke kind of relationship.
I could see that too.
Where, like, he's tried and true, and he's seen some stuff, and he's trying to help Felicity Jones's character prepare for what she's going to do now that she's a part of the rebellion. That's just, you know.
Yeah, that's just my thought. I like it. And I like this idea of the small group going out and having to, you know, get the plans for the Death Star and... I think that it'll be really cool. I'm excited.
And think about how many different stories that we can do like this. I mean, I'm not a big fan at all of a Han Solo standalone film or a Boba Fett standalone film. I'm not really interested in getting people's backstories so much, like an individual character's backstory.
I feel like that's totally pandering to the fans,
to be completely honest
with you, because those two characters probably are, well, I know they're favorites. And they were always my favorites, but I'm not as jazzed about those films as I am about Rogue One because I feel like there's only opportunity to mess it up, to mess up the backstories. So I would much rather see a new story of something that we've mentioned, but we have no clue what that means, than mess up a beloved character that we know and we could say, like, oh, that's not him.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, new characters, same universe.
Right.
An off-screen mention of an event. Yeah. I mean, like, we could do Rogue One Volume 2 if we wanted to, where Minnie Bothans died to get us this information when they stole the plans
exactly.
for the second one. You know,
exactly.
There's something we could do with that. And
yeah.
And yeah, it's I'm thoroughly excited, and I'm sure the Han Solo movie will be great.
Oh yeah, I'm still excited.
We're gonna
what
watch
I'm
it.
Saying,
yeah.
Of course I am. I love Han Solo. I love Boba Fett, but
you love Harrison Ford.
I do, and I think that will be the rub for me is that how can you replace him? You can't.
Yeah.
So, and especially since we saw him pretty young.
We saw Harrison. We know what a young Harrison Ford
exactly.
looks like.
So, I don't know. That concerns me.
Yeah, that's
way more than these new characters that we've never seen before.
Like a woman.
Oh my gosh. How dare we?
All right. Well, we're excited, as you can tell, and I cannot wait for December. I mean, one thing that I described online was that the trailers for Force Awakens made me cry with nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
The trailer for Rogue One made me jump for joy.
I feel the same way. Totally.
All right. Well, speaking of Star Wars Force Awakens.
Yeah.
We got that on Blu-ray.
We did.
Came out on Tuesday. Watched it immediately. And this was only the second time that we've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're bad nerds in that realm because we didn't go to the theater multiple times. I think Matt Rushing went 7 times.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know how he does that.
I was going to say.
But good.
You don't have enough time to do that.
But good for him.
Hey, that's awesome.
He's busy, but he makes the time.
Okay. All right. Awesome.
Yeah, it's and I remember, you know, you and I talked about Force Awakens, obviously, once we left the theater, and I talked about it with Matt Hansen on the Senate floor, and I talked about how, you know, I wasn't head over heels about Force Awakens. I wasn't...
I think your expectations were so high going in...
Ridiculously
that
high.
...that there was nowhere for them to go but down.
No, I put it on way too high of a pedestal, and I even said that on the show.
Yeah.
I said, I was like, the Star Wars failings is really only mine. Because they had an impossible feat to achieve, and I made it even more impossible. And so I enjoyed it. I liked it. There was a lot of things wrong with it, in my opinion. But I thought to myself, okay, if I watch it the second time, my expectations will be very minimal because I already know what's going to happen. But I never went back to the theater and watched it. And when we sat down and watched it, I was just like, okay, cool. I just let it wash over me. I was like, this is a fun, entertaining time. You know, this is great.
Yeah. So you liked it better the second time.
I did like it better the second time.
Okay.
Is it better than A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi? No, not by a long shot.
But I definitely think it's my fourth favorite.
Mine too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I love the nostalgia.
Maybe.
No? Really?
I don't know.
Really?
I don't know. I think...
Oh, it is mine. It's definitely mine.
I think I made a list on Letterboxd.com where you can pick which... Everybody should go on Letterboxd.com because you can say... You can chart what movies you've seen over your entire life and you can create lists and ratings and everything like that. Yeah, it took me a long time to click. And I made a Star Wars list. Like, I ranked my Star Wars films. I think I put Revenge of the Sith above
really?
Force Awakens. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, no, I know, not you.
No.
I don't know. It kind of Force Awakens and Revenge of the Sith teeters back and forth. I might I don't know. I might have to watch Revenge of the Sith again. Maybe do a double bill, like
to see which one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I really enjoy the beginning of The Force Awakens more than I do the end of The Force Awakens. I love that, like, kind of going back to the world of Star Wars. You know, like the sequences with Rey in the Star Destroyers. Like, you know. Finding parts. I love that sequence. I love, you know, getting back into the Millennium Falcon.
Mm-hmm.
I love all of those parts. I feel like towards the end, it kind of, how do I describe it? I don't know. I feel like the story's a little bit disjointed going back and watching. And I think that you actually complained about that when we came out of theater. But I was just so jazzed to be back in that world
mm-hmm.
that I kind of forgave it, and I was like, oh no, that's awesome. It was great. I know there's, you know, we've watched like the Honest trailer for this, and they mentioned how it's basically A New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is.
It really is.
And the more you watch it, the more you realize that. And I guess there's nothing wrong with it because it's their material and, you know, it's good material, but at the same time you're like, really? Really?
I really can't believe that JJ did that because
yeah.
he did that with Star Trek Into Darkness.
Right. You actually brought that up to me when we were watching. It was like, he did it again.
Yeah. which with is the two largest sci-fi franchises of all time.
Yeah.
He just repeated their greatest works.
And he had to know it.
Yeah, of course he knew it. I mean, that you could not do that without sitting down and analyzing the script and going, okay, this is a beat, this is a beat, this is a beat. And it just, it was really, really surprising to me because, you know, he got so much flack for doing that with Star Trek Into Darkness. And I'm sorry, guys, I'm sorry, nerds, but in my opinion, Star Trek Into Darkness is not a good movie. I'm able to enjoy it just because I'm a hardcore Star Trek fan. And so I lower my expectations really low, and then I watch it just because I want to see those characters again. But I thoroughly believe that Star Trek Beyond will just ignore Star Trek Into Darkness and continue on. But the thing is, Episode 8 can't do that. They cannot ignore Episode 7.
You're right.
But the thing is, though, even though they ripped the format from A New Hope, I do believe that the direction that they're going is very interesting.
I think so, too. And I'm really excited to see more Luke in the next one. Like, I really want to know what he's been doing, and I want to kind of know more of that backstory with Kylo Ren and, mm-hmm. and Luke, and, you know, maybe even have, like, a face-off type deal. I think it would be really cool.
I want to see how powerful he's become.
I want to see that, too. I mean, I can't even imagine. So, yeah, I know.
I'm getting jazzed just thinking about Episode 8. Just, like, just the... Because that's... Episode 7 achieved what it wanted to achieve. It... brought us into that world again, and it gave us the hope of something more. It gave us a sense of new adventure, new characters, a new chunk of the galaxy that we're going to explore, and just infinite possibilities. And that's why I'm excited about this Star Wars rebirth, is even if I had my questions, even if I had my, even if I felt like Force Awakens had its failings, it gave me what it intended to give me. And so, yeah, I'm thoroughly excited for Episode 8.
Me too. When we walked out of the theater, I was like, oh, I wanted more Luke Skywalker. But the fact that, you know, that storyline is going to take precedence in Episode 8, which it has to.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's footage of them filming at the island.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, okay. They release footage of them. Like, apparently, as soon as they finished rapping on Episode 7... they filmed what they wanted to film while they were there, and everybody was in their costume. And it makes perfect sense. I'm pretty sure that's how it happened, because they released some footage of them doing that, and I was like, well, they wouldn't just go back. I mean, I'm sure that they would need to get that scene. They could at least write that scene of the script. Right,
exactly.
And then film that, because we watched the behind-the-scenes
documentary,
and they talked about how they had hundreds and hundreds of steps, and they had to take up every single piece of equipment by hand on this island.
Yeah.
So you bet your sweet butt that they're going to film as much as they can while they're up there.
No kidding. Yeah, but I really appreciated, you know, those real locations. I appreciated, like we saw in the documentary, they use more of those puppet and costumes, you mm-hmm. know, especially in Maz's castle. Mm-hmm. And I actually really wish that they had made Maz an actual, like, puppet or, like, costume, but... just because I felt like it looked fakey.
We're the only ones that feel that way.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I cannot find another person who thinks that Snoke and Maz look fakey.
What?
Yeah, I'm just as confused as you. The moment that I saw Maz and Snoke, I was like, ooh.
That's how I felt too.
You need to try a few more passes, ILM.
Yeah, that's how I felt too. Especially considering, like, we absolutely adore all the Planet of the Apes movies, which I feel like is so much more realistic than what we got.
Yeah, Weta is knocking it out of the park, and it's just, ILM is the standard.
Yeah, I know.
And so when you are the standard, I have high standards for you.
Right.
And they did great with everything else, you know, like they did great with the Falcon, the chases.
Oh, yeah.
The destroyers, the everything. They did a fantastic job on the CGI front, except for Maz and Snoke. I mean, Snoke looked like he belonged in Harry Potter.
That's how I felt, too.
Yeah.
I guess we might be the minority there.
Yeah, I guess we're the minority there. Right, that's all right. But if that's its biggest failings, then...
I think we can let it go.
I think we can let that go, yeah. I enjoyed the character of Maz.
Yeah, I did too.
I was just distracted. It pulled me out.
I also kind of felt like I wanted more Captain Phasma in the film.
Completely wasted her character.
Yeah, because she was so cool.
And such a build-up, too.
Right, and then we didn't really get much from her.
What did the honest trailer say? 91 seconds of screen time?
That's so sad.
91 seconds. She's supposed to be like the right hand of Kylo Ren or General Hux or whatever, you know, like she's supposed to be the lead stormtrooper, and
come on.
We didn't even see her fire a weapon.
Right. Really? Yeah.
So crazy.
I wish that there was more, but it was cool to watch that documentary and see how JJ was really trying hard to make it feel with models and costumes and everything like that, which I appreciated.
Do you want to know what's funny?
What?
And you're not going to like this.
Uh-oh.
Everyone talks about how, you know, like JJ goes back to old school filmmaking and he shot it on film and he only uses CGI when he has to and he tries to use puppet as much as possible. The Phantom Menace was shot on film, which a lot of people forget that because George Lucas didn't start shooting digital until Attack of the Clones. And they measured the amount of CGI in both movies and it's almost the same.
Don't talk to me right now.
Nobody wants to admit that online. No one wants to admit that The Phantom Menace had just as much practical effects as Force Awakens did, and it was shot on film. Yeah, Nobody wants to talk about it.
No, I don't want
to
talk about it either. Well, it was a better movie.
Oh my, yes, yes. Force Awakens is by far a better movie. And, you know, in today's modern filmmaking, you know, like, especially a modern sci-fi movie, for him to use just as much CGI as a movie did in 1999, that is a huge feat.
That's true, especially since that's a standard now. I mean, everything CGI, it seems.
It seems, yeah, it seems. Yeah, so I think we should definitely give... I'm not trying to take away credit from JJ, and I'm not trying to take credit from you from noticing that, because it's true.
Yeah.
It's all 100% true. I'm just saying
just
nobody wants to talk about it.
It felt more organic. It felt more real.
Yes.
So, obviously, that's probably because our CGI has improved to become more real as well.
Very true.
Like, feel more natural. Whereas I feel like, you know, when the CGI started coming out, it was almost like you were impressed that you saw something that looked CGI.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You were like, oh, that's cool. They can do that with computers? Awesome.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know they had the budget for this.
Right?
Babylon 5 is amazing.
But now it's the more real, the better the CGI is. The more you don't notice the CGI. Whereas back then, I would say Phantom Menace time, wouldn't you say? You were more like, oh, wow, cool. They're using CGI. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yes, especially for a Star Wars film. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was interesting. It's funny how we shift, because in the 90s, we're like, oh man, CGI, this is amazing.
Yeah.
This feels like this is just a whirlwind of aesthetic. And then we started getting into this mode of CGI is not impressing us anymore. Mm-hmm. We can tell it's fake. Up your game, Hollywood. And then they started upping their game. We're now living in a post-Avatar world.
Right.
You know, we got Avatar. We got Planet of the Apes. And if you're not on an Avatar Planet of the Apes level of CGI realness, then people are like, what's going on? They're going to start their own podcast and complain about Snoke and Maz. And
it's true. It's true. Oh, well.
Oh, well. Yeah. Well, I mean, everyone who has the Blu-ray or has the digital download, you need to check out the special features.
Oh, my gosh.
Special features are a lot of fun. It gives you a lot
they
of
are.
Great.
We always do that.
Oh yeah, you got to. You know, why not? I mean, you just like we love the behind the scenes. If there's a director's commentary, you bet we're going to listen to it.
Absolutely.
And if there's a visual breakdown of how much green screen was used, I love those videos.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, this has an hour 10 minute documentary on it on the movie, and it's really fascinating because it takes you from the moment of the Disney buy, you know, all the way through to the end of Force Awakens, and it's just really, really interesting, and I love seeing how Kathleen Kennedy works.
I think she's done good things, in my opinion. I'm sure that some people do not like her, but I think she's done really good things.
You know, remember in The Dark Knight where there was these posters all around that said, I believe in Harvey Dent?
Yeah.
I believe in Kathleen Kennedy.
That's great.
I think she is crazy intelligent, crazy sharp.
She knows the franchise.
She knows. She's been with Lucas from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not the beginning, but, you know, like for decades. She's been with Lucas
right,
for
she
decades.
She knows what she's doing.
And actually, it's funny because I was talking with Rushing about Star Wars, and he felt like Rogue One was the first movie that felt like had no George Lucas influence. And, you know, like when he, and he wasn't criticizing it. He wasn't criticizing that at all. He's a big Lucas fan, but like he wasn't criticizing that. And he was talking about how Clone Wars, you know, like had, you know, Lucas and Dave Filoni work together. And then you have Rebels, which is just Dave Filoni. And he said, he's like, it's still Lucas because, you know, like, you know, he worked with him so long. Well, by that kind of rationale, Kathleen Kennedy just has even more Lucas influence than Dave Filoni. And so for those of you who are like who are huge Lucas fans who are worried that like his vision's going to be taken away, trust Kathleen Kennedy. And for those of you who are glad that George Lucas is gone, trust Kathleen Kennedy.
Right.
Because I feel like she's going to give us the best of both worlds.
Yeah, I sure hope so. I still am waiting for my original Blu-rays.
I know, the world is waiting, but do not hold your breath.
I know. I have faith that she might come through for me.
I hope so. Because, you know, Disney, what is Disney love above all things?
Money.
That's right, money. And so what would they make massive amounts of if they released the original trilogy unspecialized in Blu-ray?
A lot of money.
A lot of money.
Especially our money. So
they could price it for a couple hundred and I'd be like,
that's
what do you need?
Yeah, seriously.
That's the thing, is that like if we're willing to buy your movie. That was the sound of money. That was me making it rain.
All right. Oh, I hear it.
Yeah. Or like a money machine like a drug dealer uses to count his cash. Yeah, because that's how I count my ones.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Your ones.
All five of them.
All right.
So with I'm incredibly excited. I think it might happen, but I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. I feel like maybe when episode 9 comes out, we're going to get a massive 9 movie set. And maybe then we'll get the originals.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. I'm wiggling my eyebrows those of you who are listening. All right. Well, I think that's good. I think we covered a lot. I think we obviously a lot of Star Wars and a little bit of Walking Dead, a little bit about internet rage and entitlement.
Which I really know nothing about. I'm protected.
You are protected. And sadly, I am behind enemy lines. So we thank you so much for listening and downloading and subscribing. Please, if you haven't yet, if you're listening to the sound of our voice, please give us a rating on iTunes. If you give us a 5-star rating, we'll mention you on the podcast, but you can give us any rating you want. And if you please, if you're interested in another way that you can help us out besides a rating that really benefits you and not just us, you can go to audibletrial.com/nerdnuptial. That's right, audibletrial.com/nerdnuptial. 100% free to you is one audiobook of your choice. They have over 180,000 books to choose from, and you'll also get a 30-day free trial. So that's free right there just by going to audibletrial.com/nerdnuptial. You can get that free book, try it for 30 days, and then cancel and then not pay a penny. And that helps you out, helps us out. Try it, folks. If you ever are interested in reading, you can, or having, or as the Words with Nerds talks about it, having your books read to you like a king.
Nice.
You can go to audibletrial.com/nerdnuptial and you can listen to it on your Android, on your iPhone, on your Kindle, anywhere you want. And please go to thenerdparty.com. There you can find all of our episodes, all of our shows. We have 3 shows for you that I love. We have The Senate Floor, we have Aggressive Negotiations, the Star Wars podcast, and we also have this show, Nerd Nuptial, and I know that you'll like them. You'll like all of them, because I like all of them. Go to thenerdparty.com. You can also find us on Facebook on facebook.com/thenerdparty. There you can interact with us, you can talk with us, you can see what we're posting, see what kind of conversations we're having with the fans, and you can also find me on Twitter, @TheInsaneRobin. I had a good time. How about you?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah? Yeah, you had a good time. All right, well, I guess there's just one thing to say.
I love you.
I know.
State your name for the record.
Jyn Erso.
Forgery of imperial documents. Possession of stolen property. Aggravated assault. Resisting arrest.
On your own from the age of 15. Reckless, aggressive, and undisciplined.
This is a rebellion, isn't it? I rebel.
We have a mission for you. A major weapons test is imminent. We need to know what it is and how to destroy it.
Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
What will you do when they catch you? What will you do if they break you? If you continue to fight,